Marion Historic Village Museum status report. Very interesting. Councillor Telfer.
I'll move as per the recommendation. And speaking to it, there is a list on page 180 of the short-term goals and also future considerations. And it says, council staff and the curator will continue to work with the Marion Historic Village Committee to ascertain its direction and will report back in June 2020. And there is a lot of material in there. One upside, I guess, is some identified artefacts that are of value. There is some contesting of Ms. Barry's historical report versus the value of the city of Marion's beginnings. But that will be fixed up for the report, the final report. So we look forward to the final report, and we have some learnings about some valuable artefacts. And we have some disappointment, I guess, that the accreditation is taking much longer than we would have liked.
That seconded, Councillor Masika.
Yeah, thanks, Your Worship. I'd like to second up the motion the way it is without further discussion.
Thank you. Anyone speaking against or a question? Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, it was an interesting report, and the paramount thing that comes to mind is that whilst this is not a museum in England or part of the Royal Palace, it is the City of Marion, and I just wonder whether staff have given any guidance to the writer of the report about how this could be seen as insensitive about deeming many of the artefacts as being almost worthless, and I just wonder, you know, what sort of feedback are we going to get from all those many people involved in both the museum as we know it and the people over in the Red House, because I was troubled by what I read. In terms of how our people, our local people, will actually perceive the report.
All right, let's deal with that question. There was a small meeting with the curator, Mr. Lyons, Ms. Burns, myself and Councillor Telfer, and I did offer some feedback along those lines, Councillor Hull, but I'll let Mr. Lyons answer that.
The Chair, it's a valid question, Councillor. We did have a little meeting during the week. I think I'd start by just referencing the curator's credentials, which were in the paper. She's a well-educated and highly experienced person in this particular field and won a contested role, and she's done the job very well from what I can see in the last 6 months. I hope that her report doesn't suggest that the items are worthless. They're not worthless. The suggestion is that they're not significant to Marion. They're certainly indicative of what happened at a point in time many, many years ago. There's no doubt about that. But the report also assesses whether the items are of direct significance to Marion, and not many are. In fact, I think only 10 of the items specifically are relevant, specifically relevant to Marion.
Thank you. Perhaps I can add to that. Not that I'm asking Council to do anything, but what I see in the report is a tension between the professional view of what could be a Marion Museum, and it focuses on the authenticity of objects and how they fit into the storyline of, you know, the last 150 years or something, as opposed to a kind of illustration of how we used to live in a popular presentation of maybe how things were 50 years ago, 100 years, 150 years ago, whatever. So there are two different currents in this report. the wonderful group of volunteers who have been running the Marion Historic Village Museum, as it's called, they fall into the second camp, and you can see that there's some tension with this undoubtedly competent professional approach. So when this is just an interim report, so we don't need to sweat over it tonight, but when it comes back, we have to resolve that tension between, do we want to sort of back a community storytelling approach or a sort of archaeological professional museum approach? So that's what this report, I think, invites us to think about. And the fact that there's an interim report gives everyone a chance, if they want to go to the historic village display in the old Sunday school building at the back of the Uniting Church in Township Road, Marion, and also go to the Heritage Research Centre, just out the front of the council building, just so you get a sense of these different approaches. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say. Any other questions? Councillor Hull?
Thank you for your comments. But there is one comment here. As demonstrated, the museum has limited objects of historical importance. That captures what I'm talking about. But in terms of the recommendations, is there any way that we can act quickly on implementing some of those recommendations, which are almost petty cash items, making sure that some photos are not kept in plastic sleeves where they can sweat and damage the photos? Is there any way we can start to address some of those low-hanging fruit issues identified in the report?
Yes, so Mr. Lyons, what about those sort of care of items?
One of the first things we're going to do after tonight's meeting is set up a meeting with the volunteers that are down there, so Ms. Byrne and myself and the curator, and I suspect there'd be one or two interested councillors that may wish to join us for that. We'll sit down and work out what we can do over the next 3 months. The curator finishes in June. There's already a good list of things that your curator has responded to and put forward, and you've referenced them, Councillor. We will be going through them, and I want to ascertain for myself what the direction of the volunteers and what they want to do with regard to these. We can't enforce them. It's their museum, and it's theirs to do with what they wish. But I want to understand from them about the direction of the museum and how to report back to you in June.
All right. It is just to note the interim report. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So on page 201, the Southern Adelaide Economic Development Board strategic plan. Take questions first, if there are any. I've certainly got one, got a big one. At least once, if not twice last year, I was asking for some sort of report card from the Southern Adelaide Economic Development Board. After we asked about a year ago, we did have some sort of a report card, and I remember that council had a discussion. And the question that we asked was not about all these wonderful things about Tonsley being built and so forth, but what value had the SAEDB added to each of these big economic things in McLaren Vale or Tonsley or something else? And I noted there was some concern about that. So another year's gone past and we don't have a report card again. So Mr. Skoll, before we look at the future, what can you tell us about the achievements of the last year?
Thank you, Your Worship. We've had a lot of debate internally about the form that the SAEDB takes and the value that it actually provides to both the councils. Onkaparinga and Marion are behind this, but we don't actually sit on the board, and the board is made up of independents, including Nikki Govan, who has just been appointed, by the way, to the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, as well as being the chair of Business SA. We understand that we need a voice in the South. There are plenty of voices in the South who advocate for the South. But there's no doubt that we find, and if the, in the answer to the Mayor's question, number one thing is that to advocate for the South when it comes from not just one council, but a conglomerate of businesses and the councils has been effective. So we're talking about some of the things that SADB's delivered. They secured $200,000 to provide four projects in the South, two in Marion, which are about the energy project that we were doing and the smart stuff around Oaklands. There's been more than 30 meetings with the Premier and Ministers by the Chair and members of the Board on different occasions over just the last year. So certainly our Chair gets access quite unprecedented that that I don't think the individual councils would be enjoying, even though I know that we do get it. They delivered a partnership with Business SA to offer reduced membership rates, which has had a great take-up. So for small businesses, which make up the vast majority of the businesses that operate in our two councils, they can get free or reasonably costed advice on running a business and industrial issues or whatever the issues are. And they've also supported grant proposals, which we found has actually added some weight to our success. The greening of Edwardstown grant, people have asked me, would that have gone through without this? Perhaps, but certainly when the support of the Southern Adelaide Economic Development Board has been pushed there, it's actually made a difference. And the obvious one as well is the Smart City grant, which was over 800,000. There's been some debate about the way it's going to be structured going forward. The CEO of Onkaparinga was a fierce advocate for this, and of course he's departed. The new CEO, Scott Ashby, has been appointed officially today, and we were going to get Nikki Govan to come in and talk about the draft plan that's before you tonight. There are a lot of issues with it, and some of those have been detailed in the feedback that we've provided, and we've left it with the board members to take the feedback from this, wait until we see the new approach from the new CEO of Onkaparinga, and then make some decisions about a model going forward, but ensuring that we've got this voice in the South that doesn't let us be drowned out by the North. I don't know if that answers the question, but it's
well, I've got to follow up on a similar vein because it still doesn't help me a lot. And I must say, an outstanding collection of people. There's no doubt about that on board. But if you go to the end of this report, page 212-213, this is not just the Mayor having a whinge. This is feedback from businesses and business associations in the City of Marion. And under the, especially under the heading Other Comments, there are a whole lot of really good questions about the effectiveness of SAEDB, about funding, about the plan, about the timeframe, a whole series of good questions, and yet we're not, as a council tonight, we're not provided with any answers. We're just being told, hey, all these local businesses came up with these really good questions, but no answers. And so endorse this. Have staff given any consideration to answering those questions?
Yes, and they've only just come in, Your Worship, and we need to actually nut these things out, but they're all very valid. There are only eight businesses that replied, but the overwhelming feedback that we got is that they need to see more visibility of this at the local business level rather than in Parliament House on North Terrace, and that there are a lot of things that we can do better, and that this is extended mission statement is the words that they use, but what businesses are saying, and I agree with them 100%, is that we need to have three or four key projects that we're running in the South, which are not just Marion-centric, but the Southern's the centricity on all of the South to provide jobs growth for our children, our grandchildren. But these comments haven't been put into the mix yet. The board had its first meeting on Friday, and they were talking about where does the future of SAEDB sit. And that's because it is a bit up in the air because of the changes to our southern neighbour. But the questions are great, the comments are really useful, and they've been provided to the board, and we need to get some answers to all of these things so that we've got a really agreed plan between the two councils. It's got to be coherent, and it's got to be brief, and it's got to be real for the businesses that operate here.
Other questions? Councillor Hull, then Schilling, then Gard.
The first question I have is, who was the CEO? Nick Lever left, so who is the CEO now?
Nick Lever was the executive officer, yeah. And we had some issues with that relationship, and that and ended up not working well for the benefit of us all, and that we're using an administrative person to help the board at the moment, so we didn't replace Nick, because we need to determine the future of SADB. So it really is in a state of flux.
So
but Nick Lever's finished.
So there's no anchor person.
Who's the admin person, Mr. Scott?
The admin person is her name's Angela Leskey. I don't know where she comes from, but she's been sourced by Onca Baringa to help out with some of the administration of meeting procedures, minutes, organising things. But we need to work out the best way forward, Councillor Hull.
Mr. Scott, is that still shared cost? Or?
Yep. Now, so we share the cost of the chair and the admin person.
Oh, I would have thought that was a fairly important and sought-after position. But there's a perception that there's the organisation's lethargic. It's something I've been saying for years. And when the board chair came along last time, I asked if they could do a study of other such entities around Australia, the Hunter Development Board and the like, that have been very successful. I haven't heard anything back on that.
Scull, has any work been done on benchmarking comparison?
I don't know. I'd have to take that. I don't think so.
And my last question is that, you know, in the absence of having an executive officer and not really knowing how it's performing compared to other such entities, are we being rolled by the North? That's the big question on behalf of my community. Are we being rolled by the North because of the lack of impetus and energy that the Southern Development Board doesn't have?
Mr. Scull?
I think the answer is a clear no. There's a lot of funding and interest coming down to the south, especially with some of the developments in the McLaren Vale at the moment. And the big thing is the things that are happening around Tonsley. So they're not rolling us, but certainly we are getting less attention than Lot 14, but it's not because of the SADB. A lot of the attention from the state government is going into the city. But I don't think we're getting rolled by the North at all. In fact, we've got a good voice and we're heard in the city.
Councillor Schilling.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just picking up on a point that Mr. Scull said regarding the board and how we are jointly funding it with Onca Baringa, but we don't have a seat or anything on the board. How come, and should we have a vested interest and be on the board?
So we being elected members, we've actually discussed this. The board was originally chaired by a gentleman called Tom Phillips, who was the managing director of Mitsubishi in the day, if you recall. And in those days, the reason it was set up to be independent of councils, but part funded by councils, and so that the people on the board were business people. The impetus, well, that's not the word, but the onus was on us to actually report as the CEOs, because we attend the meetings but we don't vote, to report back to the councillors on the activities of the SADB and what was being planned and what was happening. I don't think we've done that as well as we might. But there was never an intention, and even then when we rejuvenated it, it was trying to keep it the business board with high-profile business leaders at the helm, which was Tom Phillips and Nikki Govan at the moment.
Councillor Gard.
Your Worship, I share an observation by a commentator in this report that it does read a lot like an extended mission statement rather than a really tangible and considered plan. And that's not to say that there is no planning involved, but that's how it reads to me. I do recall asking a question, I think it was of the board's chair a couple of years ago in this room when we had a sort of a workshop. And
is this leading up to a question?
Yes, it is. Good. Yeah. The question I asked was, is there more potential to create synergy with particularly the state government, so that in a sense, whatever your perception might be, the board is somewhat of an instrument of the state government that really dips deep into the south, and that addresses the north-south question. So my question is sort of the other way round now, from through the chair to our CEO, as to what would be the state government's perception, to your knowledge, of the board and its importance to the state government? Because I get the feeling, or I at least had the feeling, that it was sort of a toothless economic tiger which had its place but didn't actually have a true function.
So coming to, is that the question?
The question really is, what is the state government, to your knowledge, what is the state government's perception of the board?
Mr. Scull.
I recall when I was here a long time ago as a GM that we had a minister for the South, and the government at the time got rid of that position. And that was a real indication that the government was interested in both North and South. They don't have that anymore. If the question is whether the government would be willing to support the board, I don't think it would. But if the question is that do they hear the board, they do. They're aware of it, of the Southern Adelaide Economic Development Board and the Northern Adelaide Board. But what influence they have in decision-making on North Terrace, I don't know, and I couldn't say.
Councillor Gard, briefly.
Yeah, very briefly. I somewhere in between those two points you made then, Mr. Scull, I'm really more interested in whether the state government is likely or would be motivated at any level to use the board more as their instrument. In other words, to really penetrate the South and get to understand it better through that board.
Mr. Scull.
We would need to make sure that that voice of the South is heard better. Can I just say, though, that Alan Sibbons is working for the federal government in the Education Department, and the Education Department is looking to do more in schools and vocational education in the south of Adelaide, and they approach the Southern Adelaide Economic Development Board. So in those halls of government, they've certainly heard of it, and they've come to the SADB, and they're looking through one of the programs, as you would have seen in the report before you today, to do more with educational institutions and vocational education and put money into getting jobs here, as they're doing in the north. And so state government I can't answer, but certainly federal government has heard of us.
Questions, Councillor Telfer, or a motion? Thank you. Thank you. Please go ahead and speak to your motion. Do you actually want any answers to those questions, or? Well, Mr. Scull, what happens after tonight? All right, we note the report, so what?
So thank you, Chair. What we're going to do is we're going to be going back to Nikki Govan, because she's very, very keen to see whether there's an interest in council in continuing. She's very keen to understand the views of the Onkaparinga Council and the new the CEO to see if there's still enthusiasm for it to continue. I can say that the board members, a couple of whom are new, Julianne Parkinson and the wine gentleman from Chalk Hill, Jock Harvey, are very keen for this to continue because they want to contribute to the South's success. Some frustrations with staff, and it's the administration of this, and Councillor Hull's right on the money. The administration has fallen to an inordinate amount on our economic development officer, and there's a frustration there that, you know, whatever thing we do going forward, if this continues, we've got to have a resource that works across the two councils to make it fair in terms of how much work is done by both councils. And at the moment, it's been a frustration. So I'll go back and we'll work out a way forward. But truth is, we need to wait for the new CEO to get in as well.
Is that seconded? Councillor Gard, anything to add? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Over to the next item. Streetscape. Questions on notice, that they be noted. Page 214, Councillor Hutchinson. Seconded, Councillor Schilling. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we're on to motions from elected members. Page 217, Streetscape Initiative, Council Funded Crossovers. Councillor Hull.
There's a minor change to the motion, Mr. Mayor, before I move it. That as a council-wide streetscaping initiative, council will fully fund a standard crossovers as the streetscaping program occurs. The standard being that it being the standard, not a reinforced one, not a double width one, just a standard crossover, something that Mr. Lyons imparted to me, and I take that on board. Now's the time to pick that up. And if you're happy, I'll speak to the motion, Mr. Mayor.
Go ahead.
Members, we as a council, both in the last council and this council, have had a big focus on streetscaping. We've acknowledged that this is the thing that our people, our community, acknowledges the most. It's what they walk out of their front gate and witness every day. And that's often what we're judged on. And the council's been throwing a lot of resources at streetscaping, different projects that is ongoing. We haven't exhausted the list of streetscapes that we'd like to look at. However, there's one glaring omission in this, and that is that we can have a lot of money spent on a new streetscape which could pick up water-sensitive urban design, it could pick up all sorts of things. But we could see gaps where there's bitumen or no crossover at all. In other words, dirt or gravel. And gravel is a hazard in itself. I don't think really that's what we want. I think if we're going to have a streetscape, spend a lot of money on streetscaping, that we have a holistic approach where we don't leave anything to chance, that it's all covered. Now, the irony is, Mr. Mayor, that many years ago, I'm convinced that I moved a motion in this place for exactly this. And somewhere along the line, it's dropped off. The council staff can't find any record of it. Fair enough. Now is the time for me to correct that and put it in place. So it's actually doing what we're doing and doing it well. In other words, instead of actually doing some half-hearted gesture to streetscape, that we actually do have crossovers addressed in this as well, a standard crossover, not a reinforced one or double width, just a standard crossover.
Thank you. Can I ask staff why a total estimated cost wasn't put in the comments? Mr. Lyons?
That's a fair comment, Your Worship. There was an estimated cost per crossover of $1,500 to $3,000. Given for streetscapes, we typically only do one or two streets in the streetscaping per year. It could be, let's say, in the order of 20 to 25 crossovers, so we can multiply that and get, say, $50,000.
Is that seconded? Councillor Gard?
Your Worship, I don't think we can do enough at the moment to lift the City of Marion in this respect. I'm a great one for the maxim that if a job's worth doing, it's worth doing well. And in the case of our streetscaping, there is a real potential hole, as Councillor Hull puts it, if we are reliant on the resident. It's not really a fair proposition anyway, because the resident doesn't get that much say in what happens or where the priorities are in the streetscaping exercises. I'd like to support the motion wholeheartedly.
Austin?
Yeah, it's just a question. I'll have to ask it to Mr. Lyons. I'd like to ask it to Councillor Hull, but I note the staff's recommendation of a slightly different word motion, which really gives staff in exceptional circumstances, and I stress exceptional, to not replace driveway, such as if it goes across the entrance to, say, Bunnings, where they've built a really strong heavy goods entrance. Are we really going to dig that up and put block paving in, which is going to be basically destroyed? Well, the motion as I see it right now would do exactly that. And I just want Mr. Lyons to comment on that, because I would move that as an amendment.
Mr. Lyons.
Can I just start by taking the liberty of saying I really like this motion? I just want to put that out there, and I'm hearing that coming back too, so that's really, really pleasing. The reason why we made that little amendment at the bottom of the page is that there are a number of instances in commercial areas, typically along Marion Road, let's say Fielders, which is opposite the depot, which have quite a long, substantial, you know, 150 thick driveway. It's not your conventional one. And we wouldn't want to do that sort of thing as part of this. I believe that's why the Councillor Hull has inserted new wording that it's a standard width. And I understand he probably wants to make it normal driveways, which we'll do, and abnormal, in inverted common, driveways we wouldn't.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure that we'll deliver that. The only thing is, I don't like the term owner's preference. It should be our preference for our asset. That's the only wording in that new motion I didn't really like. Yeah, okay.
So, Councillor Crossland, it's with you. Do you want to?
Unless Councillor Hull wants to take that on board, I'll move that as amendment, but I would take out the owner's preference to retain the existing driveway. I'm not happy with that.
To facilitate this, I'll ask the question to Councillor Hull, even if it is out of order. Councillor Hull, your reasoning for not preferring the staff recommendation?
Mayor, I thought I addressed that. Obviously, the motion hasn't been understood by saying a standard width.
Right.
Standard depth.
You were trying to capture the same intent, basically.
I did. And the other thing is that the owner may have their asset ripped up anyway. And does that mean that we don't replace it? Like, it's not their fault that we're ripping it up to do our streetscape.
Oh, all right. So, Councillor Crossland, what do you want to do?
I'll still move the amendment then, because I don't think that wording sufficiently protects the businesses that have built extra access to their premises.
Is it a point of order?
I would like to clarify what power we have to rip up someone's driveway if we remove the owner's preference to retain the existing driveway.
That's a fair question before we actually put the motion. Question of Council's power. Mr. Lyons, can you help?
It's a good discussion point. At the moment, we have a crossover permit process, and under the Local Government Act, the responsibility for a crossover is with the home owner, with the land owner, and they actually need to get a permit to place or replace a crossover. Let's say hypothetically they had just paved their driveway and had a permit to pave their crossover. At this stage, the staff recommendation is that we wouldn't move in and rip up their new paving and put our concrete or other paving in, that we would at least give them the option to say we would do it at our cost, or they may wish to retain whatever they've just received a permit to install.
Yes, just to go to Councillor Crossland's earlier point, I think owner's preference to retain is there because they might have just put in a mosaic or something, so they're on their driveway, something fancy. and they may not want council to replace it. So
it saves us money.
I think that's the intent of the administration recommendation.
I accept
and that.
That
covers Councillor Valescu's point.
I do think we can put faith in staff to use common sense, and I think that's happening now. I've seen discretion with other streetscapings where we have replaced all the driveways already. I didn't know we needed it in a motion, but I just want to protect those certain assets that I think we shouldn't be ripping out.
So, Councillor Crossan, you're moving the staff recommendation as an amendment. I do consider it is in order because it's still fully funding crossover replacements for streetscape projects, so it's the same topic, but you're allowing for some exceptions. Okay, so did you wish to speak further? Covered it?
No, I think we've covered it. Thank you, Your Worship.
Is that seconded? Councillor Telfer, did you wish to speak? Then I put the amendment immediately. Those in favour of the amendment, the staff recommendation, that's unanimous. So the amendment is most certainly carried. Now, anyone who hasn't yet spoken may speak in the debate. Councillor Pryor.
I just have a question about a non-standard driveway in the current scenario now, or in the amended scenario. If someone has a 30% wider driveway than standard, or crossover than standard, what would we do?
Sounds like an exception to me. Mr. Lyons, what do you think?
To me, Councillor, it sounds like my discretion and judgment, and if it's 30%, but in my judgment it should be done, and when I say my judgment, my staff's judgment, then we'll do the right thing by us and the owner.
That's the correct answer, thank you.
If there's nothing more, then back to Councillor Hull to close the debate. Probably not much need.
You're correct, Mr. Mayor. I actually voted for the amendment. But I'll just say this one last thing, that for those who might be teetering, this is not their property. This is actually council property that we're talking about spending money on, and I think that we should be aware of the fact that we're doing all right with our relationship and expectations of businesses and community.
All those in favour of the motion as amended, that's unanimous, carried, thank you. On to page 222, Councillor Hull, crossover funding incentive.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Once again, that addition of standard crossover twice in that motion. It was a good segue into this motion by me mentioning that this is actually not the residents' land. But in this case, taking into account the financials, this is footpath replacement, notwithstanding a streetscaping campaign. Okay, so we're asking for a 50% contribution. Now, at the moment, it's 100% contribution. So this is if this was to succeed, it will be a win for ratepayers, and be the businesses or homeowners, in getting a better crossover and a better streetscape. Because it really annoys me, I don't know whether you walked our streets, how we end up with mismatch, you know, bits of rock and bits of brick and whatever they've found to actually make sure that they don't sink into a hole when they cross over from the verge to into their property. And sometimes it can be gravel, sometimes in the winter it can be puddles of water. It's not really a good look. And maybe 50% contribution will be enough for some landowners to actually consider, well, yeah, I'll give that a go. I think it could lend to an improvement in our streetscape, be it that it's not part of our major streetscaping programs. It can be an improvement, and we need to probably let landowners know this at the time when we might be doing a footpath upgrade or repair. And I recommend the motion.
Is that seconded? Councillor Masika.
Thanks, Your Worship. I'd like to second the motion without further comments.
Anyone opposing or amending? Councillor Valesky.
Your Worship, just from staff, what's the difference between the motion Councillor Hull's put up and the alternate motion?
Mr. Light.
As far as outcome.
This is a really interesting proposal from Councillor Hull. I endorse the concept, if I may. It's going to have a couple of ramifications depending on the take-up. If every single person takes us up, it's going to get super, super expensive, as opposed to the streetscaping, and could halve the amount of footpaths that we roll out. If no one takes it up, it'll mean that we send out 300 or 400 letters to all of these residents and waste hundreds of hours of admin time as well. And because we don't know the take-up, we don't know the cost or the hours. So the only thing I've put in the staff suggestion at the bottom of the page is that we trial this for 12 months, and that way we can work out the take-up, we can work out the extra cost, we can work out the reduction in the footpaths laid, we can work out the hours, and then I can recommend to you whether we continue this or not.
Councillor Valesky, it's with you.
I'd like to move the alternative motion as proposed by staff.
Yeah. Again, I think that is consistent. It's basically the same thing, but putting a time limit. So it's a valid amendment. Did you wish to speak further?
I think it's a good idea, but we get a chance to see how it works, and we can plan for it into the future if we wish to proceed.
Is the amendment seconded, Councillor Schilling?
Yeah, I agree with Councillor Valescu. I think it's a good idea, and doing it for 12 months will give us an idea of where we're at in 12 months' time, and if we continue, and budgets and all that sort of stuff, it will just help for the future.
The amendment has been moved and seconded, and it gets voted on immediately. Those in favour? Those against? It's carried. So we're now dealing with the amended motion. Anyone who hasn't spoken may speak in the debate. Councillor Hutchinson.
Thank you, Your Worship. I just wanted to point out to members, if you look at page 225, just so everyone's clear that you're voting on the piece of concrete between the footpath and the invert, which is where the transition occurs, because some people think you get the whole thing as part of it. So we're also going to have to educate the community on that as well, what we're talking about, because there might be an expectation your entire piece of concreted driveway will be changed over as part of it.
Yes, that's right. I thought, before I got on to council, I thought crossover was something totally different. Councillor Pryor?
Just a question through the chair for Mr. Lyons. Do you have any idea of the take-up currently of people who redo their crossover when we're doing a footpath in their local area?
Yes, I do. None, because we don't ask them. So we will go out and we will replace either a road length or a few metres here or there, or a few metres on either side of a crossover, but we never ask them, do you want to do yours at the same time, because it's solely their responsibility. So this would put it back on us that we would ask them, and we would offer to contribute 50% at the time.
Anyone else? Councillor Pryor?
Just a follow-up. Would there be any economy in doing the crossover at the same time as the neighbouring footpath?
Mr. Lyons?
Yeah, there is, but given that we're not doing it at the moment, it's still an extra expense and an extra job, so it's going to reduce the total concrete that we lay as far as footpath linear metres.
All right, then the mover, Councillor Hull, to close the debate.
There's been some good points made here. One is that we're talking about two bits, the one bit on the curbside of the footpath and the bit that crosses over from the footpath to the residence property. We're not talking about the footpath per se, and I think we need to get our minds around that. The other thing is that, once again, this is not their property. And we're expecting people to pay for a council asset. And it's interesting that we don't have any measure on the economies of scale that
Councillor Pryor alluded to, that while we're there, how much cheaper would it be just to fill in those couple little gaps anyway, because you're there? So the biggest part of the cost is labour. So, you know, I hope you consider this. And before I just close off, Mr. Mayor, can I ask a question in closing, that if with the amendment, when will this be reported back to us about how this is travelling? Otherwise, this will disappear into the ether again, like my last motion.
Well, if there's a trial for a year, Mr. Lyons, what do you say?
Trial for the year, so we would commence this effectively now, and we would send back a report in 12 months' time, ready for inclusion in the following annual business plan.
So somebody's monitoring this, and there'll be some automatic trigger for it to come back to our council as a report?
Definitely.
Okay. I'll put the moat. Is there a point of order? Councillor Valescu? Mr. Lyons?
That's very true, Councillor Valescu. So I guess we could run with how it's written, or I could bring you a report in 9 months, which would inform you ready for the subsequent year.
I think that's what we would expect.
12 months from now.
About 12 months from now. So can staff ensure that that is noted and built into the program, please? Put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. On to page 230, Australia Day Council membership. The two things I wanted to highlight in the supporting information. One is that the annual fee payment was meant to cease last year, but when presented with an invoice, Council paid it anyway. So it's up for review. Secondly, you can see from the explanation that there's some concern that the activities or extent of Australia Day Council activities are extending far beyond the Australia Day Parade and Australia Day Awards. So that's partly what's behind that, apart from the financial concern. Would anyone like to move that motion? Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor, I move that the matter be deferred. I have been in discussion with the Chair, Mr. Mayor, and he has asked for this to be...
It's a procedural motion, so...
Deferred until the 24th of March.
Yep, that's the next
when the
council
deputation
meeting
will be here, so we have better and further information about this.
The deferral motion's moved. Is it seconded? Councillor Schilling, all those in favour, raise your hand. All those against... That's carried, so that motion is deferred.
Can I ask a question at this point?
No, well, I think it's not, members, but I think it, members it, would want to
just
get
timely,
on with the business.
It's just about administration yes. reacting time in a time frame. We heard from Mr. Lyons that we'll get that report back about the crossovers. This is a case in question where it never came back to us and we paid the fee. If you take my point.
I've certainly taken that up with administration offline.
But, you know, so it just worries me that we actually do set deadlines.
You're really just repeating the point that the Mayor made.
Yeah.
So let's keep going. Yeah. Page 236, city ban on glyphosate and Roundup. Councillor Hull. 236.
Mr. Mayor, I move this because I have a measure within the community that's what's expected. In fact, as you can see in the supporting information in the report, many councils interstate and overseas have actually done this. There's some interesting comments in the report from the staff that we could actually introduce manual removal and things like that. Can I put it to you, members, that we actually go out there now and spray, and there's quite a significant figure of poison, $150,000 worth of poison we put around our city every year, that those weeds die. They die in situ. So what happens then? There's a chuckle. They sit there as some sort of memorial to the weed, and the residents have still got the weeds, albeit that they've been poisoned. And in the process, we may have poisoned the hedge as well. You know, I've seen that happen before, where we've had to replace some poor bugger's hedge because we sprayed the weeds, but we killed your hedge. And, you know, and it just worries me that aside from the concerns of the community about using this poison in our community, that we're not actually effectively managing the weeds at all. All we're doing is making them change colour. The weeds remain. Are we effectively managing weeds on behalf of our community members?
Is that seconded? Councillor Gard, wish to speak?
I guess, Your Worship, on this one, I would have liked to have heard more from management. I understand there is a considerable cost sensitivity, but as someone that is constantly rattling the chains as far as city beautification is concerned, I do agree with Councillor Hull on this. I think that we need to do more than just kill the weeds. And I think there comes a time when you have to move forward and do what is better for the community, and I'm talking both health-wise and visually, and do a lot more work to research down the costs of alternatives. I don't believe that the cost gaps that we're currently citing are necessarily the best we can do. But in principle, I do support the motion.
Anyone speaking against? Councillor Vlescu?
I'd like to propose an alternative. The motion selected by staff, we need to identify what impact this will have and how we can do it effectively. And I wouldn't want this motion to lose based on the fact that there's really no information to guide our decision and its impact. So I'd like to move the alternate as an amendment if I can. Otherwise, I'll foreshadow that I'll move it if this one fails, if we get time.
So I'm ruling that it's not actually negating the motion. It's really calling for more information before a final decision is taken. So I'll accept the amendment. You wish to speak any further?
No. We've tried to bring this issue several times, and council at that time didn't want to pay for a $25,000 steamer. So I guess once we get more information, we also need to be aware of the fact that people can still use this. So it may be a huge reduction, it could be a phasing out totally, it could be nothing, but let's make sure we make an informed decision based on the impact on our business.
Is the amendment seconded, calling for a report in May? Councillor Masika?
Yes, Your Worship. I truly appreciate what Councillor Hawley is trying to propose, but instead of dropping up all these chemicals which we are using up to treat weeds, so we needed to have a report which can guide us what will be another alternative if we decide to move away from glyphosates back to what. So I support to have an alternative, or to receive a report from the administration which will give us alternatives and how much it will cost of the alternatives before we can make up a final decision.
I'll put the amendment now, calling for the further report. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried. So that becomes the motion now. Anyone who hasn't spoken may speak in the debate. Councillor Pryor?
I've just got a point of order. Can I extend time to the completion of the agenda, please?
Of course you can. Is that second? That includes going back to the Edwardstown motion. Is that seconded, Councillor Schilling?
Edwardstown.
Yes, it does. I just did. All those in favour?
Edwardstown.
Oh. I was against.
I'm going against
that. There won't be an extension of time then. If we're quick, we can finish this motion. Any other speakers? Councillor Crossland.
Look, I'm against the motion. Glyphosate is safe in Australia, so the experts say. Red meat is more dangerous than glyphosate, so the experts say. It's the cheapest option for council, so I don't know why we're trying to financially cause issues to council. And in the field that I'm interested in, which is biodiversity restoration, it's an essential part of doing that.
Any other speakers in favour? Then I'll go to Councillor Hull to close the debate.
Mr Mayor, as Councillor Valescu said, we've been through this before and we've called for reports before, and this is a circular debate. Councillor Valescu often calls for reports and calls for even more reports.
I'm sorry, that's totally disrespectful what you're implying.
A point of order from Councillor Valescu. Please keep within the bounds of the meeting rules,
sure.
Councillor Hull.
And
time is about to expire.
Yeah, at the last meeting we called for a report about climate change as well. But with this one, I just think that we can actually do the weeding better for all the things I've described.
Order meeting's finished.
Point of order is called by Councillor Valescu. The time for the meeting has expired. I therefore close the meeting.